property investment with a twist and the keys to finding equity in your investment. PropertyWise.
Welcome back to PropertyWise, and great to be here with you for another episode, and great to be here with you, Bob.
Yeah, great to be back, Ben.
Today we're talking about property cycles. Quite relevant in the marketplace today, isn't it, Bob?
Certainly is.
Always relevant, probably.
Well, it's relevant, yeah. It happens. It's there. It's relevant.
Indeed. Let's move straight over to the headline news, though, with Craig, and then we'll get straight into it.
In this part of the news, we look at the prospects for the property industry in 2014. Coming up later, we consider some of the implications of the recent Privacy Act changes and highlight the importance of keeping good records. But first, according to the Estate Market Facts report, published by Bendigo Bank and the Real Estate Institute of Australia, the upswing in house prices seen in the December quarter of 2013 is likely to continue. The Real Estate Institute of Australia said solid results for Sydney and Melbourne, as well as strong performances in Perth, Brisbane and Darwin in the last year's final quarter, show that some markets are well into a growth phase. And the good performance wasn't just limited to detached housing, with other property types also gaining. The industry organisation said it expected interest rates to stay low in 2014 and most markets to show continued steady improvement in activity, adding it should be generally a positive year, provided there are no unforeseen global issues that emerge. Housing finance data released this week by the Australian Bureau of Statistics reveals that 2014 is off to its hottest start in 5 years. Nearly every state is showing double-digit annual growth. New dwelling constructions and units continue to rise in popularity, with medium-density dwellings comprising 43% of new home approvals. 5 years ago, attached dwellings accounted for 30% of new constructions, rising to 39% last year. With oversupply becoming an issue in some inner cities, investors should be sure to take a good look at their local market, especially vacancy rates and building approval levels, before committing. Minutes of the Reserve Bank of Australia's March meeting show that it believes the present housing market conditions do not pose a near-term risk. However, since rising house prices and borrowing may have the potential to encourage speculative activity in the sector, the Reserve Bank is keeping a close eye on the local housing market. However, with current evidence indicating there is little sign of lending standards relaxing, board members concluded that there was no immediate cause for concern. The minutes also recorded a discussion of tools that had been used elsewhere in the world to slow down demand for established housing, in addition to their possible application in Australia. Some in the industry saw the Reserve Bank's comments as a steadying hand, allaying fears and warnings of hot markets and bursting bubbles that always seem to grab media attention.
Thanks, Craig. Okay, Bob. Property cycles. Important topic, obviously, if you're a property investor, property developer, anyone who's got anything to do with buying, selling and owning real estate.
Well, that's right, Ben. It pays to have a reasonable understanding of cycles.
Absolutely. Let's start with that. Let's talk about what are the phases of the property cycle.
Okay, well, property investment, if you like, or property does go through a cycle. And it's not something you can set your clock by.
Right.
Because there's, you know, there's different drivers and different things can affect the cycle that can throw it out. I suppose we can talk about those in a minute if you like. But typical cycle, in simple terms, you might be able to break that down into four phases.
Right.
The first phase, probably call it the opportunity phase.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the beginning. Let's call that beginning of the cycle. Some people use a graphic of a clock.
Okay, yeah.
You know, you've probably seen the 12-hour clock as a property cycle, and this is the first phase. This is the first positive thing. That's the beginning of the property cycle. So prices are just starting to lift a little bit.
Right.
And it's a phase of the cycle that a lot of people don't really get a handle on, because if they're not all day, every day in property, they don't see it. They don't see this first little bit start to take off.
The signals.
Yeah, the signals and the slow bit of growth. They tend to see it when it gets more momentum.
Right.
And that's the next phase, what we call the growth phase, or some people might call it a boom phase, I guess. And that's when a lot of investors out there, they can see what's happening. They're reading, they're seeing, they're listening to taxi drivers on the way to the airport. And they can see things are moving. So this is a market now, it starts to get a bit of momentum behind it. some obvious price growth and people start to get a bit excited.
So the market's warm. It's warming
it's
up.
It's warm. It's warming up. It's getting a good run on. It's got a run on. So the next one's the peak.
Right.
Now, this would be like 12 o'clock on your clock.
Okay.
I've seen some property cycles where they're broken down into a lot more pieces, but I just want to keep it simple.
Sure.
So this is the peak phase. So we've had a boom. We've had a good run.
Yep.
And it's basically, it's got ahead of itself. If you like it, it's got a bit too much steam, which always happens. We see it in the share market. We see it in property. Developers developing too much stock.
Yeah.
You know, people start to pay silly prices. They try to get ahead of the market. They'll pay what they think is a pretty high price, thinking it'll go on forever.
Sure.
Guess what? Doesn't go on forever.
No. What's the next phase then?
Oh, well, so it starts to peak. So it's gone over the peak. Now, the next phase, I suppose you'd call it correction phase or a contraction phase maybe.
Yeah? Yep.
And this is where it starts to correct.
Sure.
So it starts to correct the overheat, you know, there's too much heat in the market. There starts to be, there might be too much stock on the market.
Right.
And so that stock needs to be mopped up. There's only a certain amount of demand. So that can affect prices. So everything's around supply and demand. So you've got a lot of stock. Not necessarily lots of demand, so prices start to come back a bit to get rid of that excess in stock. People are piling in at the end.
Right.
This is when the taxi drivers are telling you it's a great thing to get into property property investment. It's probably a good time to back off a bit.
Right, yep.
And that's the correction phase. And that'll be like after midnight going on till maybe 2 o'clock.
Right. Okay.
The good part is that the boom phase, the increase phase, is a big part of that cycle. So although I say there might be four simple parts to the cycle, they're not all equal in time.
In time.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about that. How long is a cycle typically? And I guess an overall cycle.
Well, you certainly can't set your clock by them. A lot of people say they're, seven to nine
that's
years.
That's it, yeah. That's what you hear, 7 years.
But it can vary a lot. There's a lot of things out there that can affect it. I can remember going through some cycles that have been very flat for years.
Right.
But then what happens if a cycle's flat for years, it gets some impetus and it'll usually take off in a hurry and rise rapidly because it's making up for lost time.
Right, yep.
So it's not a complete circle. It's, all these different drivers out there, aren't there?
Well, yeah, let's talk about those. And different areas obviously perform differently. I know where we're from in Brisbane, sometimes, like you said, it can stay flat for a long time and then it goes up
hard. Way to go. We saw that, in Brisbane for a lot of almost about 7 years, probably in the late 90s, second half of the 90s, it was quite flat.
Right.
I don't mind. I make money in any market. I don't really care.
Sure.
But then when it took off in 2002, after probably 8 or 9 years of not doing a lot, it really took off and prices doubled in like 18 months.
Mm.
So it's catching up a lot of that pent-up demand. It had to catch up in a hurry.
Sure.
And it did. And we see that sometimes.
Yeah. Okay.
That was a bit of an extreme example. I mean, you don't normally have a market that flat for that long. But, or you can have, like you talked about, localities.
Mm.
You know, I think of the Gold Coast because I used to live there for a while once. I mean, they're extreme. Extreme highs, extreme lows.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you got like 3 years of stock on the market at the end of it.
Right, yeah. You got to watch yourself there.
Well, it's tied a lot to tourism as well. You know, lots of emotion gets in there.
Mm.
But, yeah, and of course, property cycles are at different phases in different parts of the country.
Right.
Some capitals tend to follow others. So you could have something in the boom phase in Perth, and it could be in the correction phase in Brisbane or somewhere like that. So,
right, sure.
So you really need to get a bit of a handle on where the property cycle is in your area of interest.
In your area, that's it. That's the key.
Yeah. But like we said, there's various drivers out there.
Yeah, let's go through a few of them.
These are the things that affect the property market. They affect investment. They affect development like we do.
Yep.
Things like interest rates.
Big one.
No, big one. I mean, I lived through, of course, I was born in the mid-80s. It's hard to believe, but I was. Where retail interest rates hit 17%, 18%.
Wow.
Some of the building societies and that sort of thing. That was before deregulation in 87. And then, into, say, 2000 and early 2014, I'd write down, five, you can borrow money in the fours. You can borrow 4.6, 4.7 borrowing money. So big extreme. I don't think we'll see those extremes anymore. The way the financial market is these days, I don't think we'll see those big extremes. But, I mean, it could run from, 5 to 10. There could be a long-term average at 7, 7.5. Who knows? Well, ask me in 20 years and I'll give you the answer. But interest rates can be high, they can be low. Even things like land, the availability of land. Like places like Sydney where you can't go east, you're in the ocean. And you're west, you've got the mountains and you're sort of constrained. Therefore, land comes at a premium. That's why land gets, going out west, you're sort of west-southwest expanding out of Sydney.
Right.
The availability of land. certain phases. We know as developers that there's certain phases of the cycle where it's fairly easy to come across a development site.
Sure.
And there's other times when the market heats up, it's harder, or they seem to be too expensive. So just availability of land. Things like construction costs, you know, a lot of people think, construction costs, they probably slowly go up in time. But it's a supply and demand thing. If a builder's busy, what's going to happen to the building prices?
Prices will go up.
Builder's got lots of work on the books. The tradies are busy. They'll put up their price straight away.
Absolutely.
The builder put up his margins and build prices going up when they're busy. When they're looking for work, what's the first thing to happen? The brickies whinge, don't they?
Mm.
Oh, they all whinge.
It's
good. It was good. You know, plumbers are out of their BMWs back into a ute. It's all good. And prices come back. You know, I can remember say pre-GFC, let's say late 2007, build costs in my part of the world were actually higher then than in the beginning of 2014.
Sure.
After all those corrections. Builders still make money.
Mm.
Suppliers even had to come back a bit. So build costs, they can vary depending on the market. Sales, you know, some, as we know, certain phases, it's easy to sell. Certainly during that boom phase and towards the peak, it's easy to sell off plan. In fact, if somebody wants to buy a property in that boom phase, you probably have to buy off the plan.
To secure something.
Yeah, or it's all gone by the time it's finished. Just think, like just after the GFC, really hard to sell stuff. Investors sort of deserted the market.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, public confidence, we see that. It's high, it's low. Sometimes after a change of government, whether you agree with the change or not, if there's been a bit of a groundswell to change a government, let's say, which often happens, swings both ways, you often find a bit more confidence comes in after that election and things pick up.
There's some good drivers in there.
Yeah, population growth's another one. Interstate migration, international migration, we've seen that in certain areas.
And that just feeds straight into the supply and demand equation, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Obviously, you've got more people, you've got more demand, and that's going to push things in that direction.
Yeah, it does. And they all have effects on the cycle.
Mm.
Yeah.
A couple of good things to look out for there. Now, what does this mean to your average investor who's looking to maybe purchase a property or sell a property? How do they need to take this information into account as far as the cycle is concerned? Obviously, there's probably better times to be looking to purchase, maybe, or better times to be looking to sell, or are there other ways to look at it?
Well, I guess it depends on the mentality, if you like, or the strategy of the individual.
Right.
You know, you can talk about investors who are long-term thinkers, long-term investors. They want to build a portfolio. They want to hold for quite a period of time, get capital growth, you know, reduce debt event, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Maybe hold through a few
through property cycles.
Yeah.
The old Chinese saying is, you know, buy, never sell.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not silly. But you want to be able to hold it comfortably.
Mm.
So what I call traders. They're guys that move in and out of markets. If they think the share market's going to get some good growth, they'll put most of their money into the share market. They'll ride that.
Yep.
And they might come to a point, if they're smart enough, they get out at the right time. If they understand the share market cycle, then they might say, look, property shares are starting to go off. Property looks like it might take off. So they move their money over into property and they'll move their money around. They're more like the traders.
Right, yep.
I'm a bit old school, a bit conservative. I love property. I've been in it for 32 years, so I have a much longer term view. But that said, if you can see a market's really getting a lot of heat in it, you might back off a bit from buying at the peak because you're going to have a bit of a dip in valuations. There again, if you can really pick the beginning of the growth phase, well, you're going to do better off.
Yep, absolutely.
You need to understand property cycles, where you are.
And preferably not buy at the peak and sell at the trough. That's the
well. That's what happens with a lot of people that don't really understand the game and what's going on.
Mm.
And they start to hurt or they get scared at the peak. And of course, that's when everybody wants to sell. Mm. It's a bit of a herd mentality, you know. If you're a bit outside of property and you're not taking enough notice, you're not understanding the drivers, you're not understanding the cycles. You're sort of the tail and not the head, which is not where you want to be. And those sort of people end up getting a little bit hurt. Because they're buying at the wrong time and they end up selling at the wrong time through fear or necessity or over gearing or whatever.
Mm.
Or been to too many property investment seminars.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, Bob, well, I think we'll tie up on property cycles now and we're going to move into the second half of the headline news with Craig.
Now back to PropertyWise news. Changes to the Privacy Act that came into effect on March 12th offer lenders more comprehensive information while ensuring increased transparency for consumers. This should mean that those who manage their money well are more likely to be rewarded with lower financial costs. However, there are worries that consumers who have experienced repayment difficulties in the past may be assessed as higher risk and incur higher rates of interest as a result. This could itself make it even harder for those consumers to stay on top of their financial obligations. Previously, only negative information about credit history could be reported in Australia. The new system should allow lenders to offer more attractive terms to those consumers deemed to be a low risk. And finally this week, rental property owners claiming to conduct a business of letting properties need to pay close attention to record keeping and substantiating expenses used for tax deduction purposes. In a recent case, a taxpayer had to go before the Administrative Appeals Tribunal to appeal the Australian Taxation Office's decision that she was not carrying on a business of letting properties and was not entitled to claim certain tax deductions. The tribunal ruled the taxpayer was conducting a business of letting rental property despite them having a full-time job, but refused a number of deductions. The main advantage in claiming to be conducting a business rather than holding investment properties is that there are more deductions potentially available. For most investors with one or a few properties, though, the deductions already available to them should be adequate. It's clear, though, that both need to keep logbooks, diary notes, and solid evidence of any expenses claimed. And that's it for PropertyWise News.
Well, thanks very much for joining us once again on PropertyWise, and thanks for being with us, Bob.
Oh, I love being here.
Absolutely. Really value your questions and comments. Please jump on the website, and we do look at all of those, so please pop them in there. Happy to answer them for you on the shows coming up. And stay tuned for the next episode. Catch you later.
Bye.